BSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor. My colleague and friend, Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I unfairly interrupted him as he was pointing us to Beijing, but we're in Beijing now, asking, this is a thought experiment. I love these things. What if Xi Jinping survives the present profound downturn in the economy, the disorder throughout Asia, even the challenge now and again suggested by the Chinese Communist Party and its PLA? What if he survives all of that tension, all of that darkness? What if the child of the Red Guard, the man who would be king and remains in charge of a country that is badly damaged, deteriorating, even to the point of closing its borders again or in some fashion? What if he survives? What will China look like? Gregory, you asked this provocative question. And before we go to the answer, what does Taiwan mean to Xi Jinping, presuming the economy is as bad as we're told by Wall Street? What does Taiwan do for him to maintain authority? Thank you.
Well, I think we have to see it in light of Xi's historical image of himself. He's not the man who would be king. He's the man who would be emperor. And to achieve something which Mao himself could not finally achieve. And Xi believes that he could do that because being an emperor in the Chinese context would be something of a very durable and massive context. Now, what he must do with regard to Taiwan is he must defeat the Republic of China, because this is a war between the Communist Party of China and the Republic of China. It was an insurrection, the Chinese Civil War was an insurrection by the Chinese Communist Party against the government, which was the Republic of China under Chiang Kai-shek, because the Republic of China was the legitimate successor to the imperial government of China around 1911 and 1912 after the Empress Dowager died. And the Republic of China continues to exist. We call it Taiwan today, but the official name, of course, is the Republic of China. So the Chinese Civil War never succeeded in eliminating the Republic of China. So the People's Republic of China literally is, okay, they created this new country on the mainland of China, but it's still not legitimate in the overall scheme of things. It's not the successor government to all of those millennia of emperors and dynasties of the Chinese people. So to really cement the legitimacy of the People's Republic of China, the Republic of China has to disappear. And that means you have to destroy Taiwan. Taiwan was never part of the People's Republic of China. So to say that they want to reclaim it would be, well, it's just a joke. It's a fallacy. But they want to eliminate it and incorporate it for the first time into the People's Republic of China. And Xi has said that he wanted to go to war and do that. The reality is that the People's Liberation Army have been sending signals these past months saying, well, don't count on us, because this is not a war which we can win, not just in the direct amphibious assault and airborne assault across the Taiwan Straits, but because it will become a much broader war with Vietnam and India and Japan, the Philippines and South Korea intimately involved. And what we're seeing today, as Xi's position gets a little tenuous, is that North Korea, which most people in the United States think is allied to Beijing, in fact is showing its true colors, as we've discussed before, in that it is allied primarily with Moscow, because it was Stalin who gave the impetus to Kim Il-sung originally for the creation of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, and which became North Korea. So right now we've got Kim Jong-un, the grandson of Kim Il-sung, currently and with talks with Moscow. And there's a suggestion that the North Koreans will provide ammunition manufacturing to help the Russians in the war in Ukraine and the like. But the reality is it's showing that if the People's Liberation Army is forced to go to war against Taiwan and against India and against Vietnam and therefore against Japan and the US and so on, can they count on North Korea? And the answer is probably no. North Korea may well fire a few symbolic fireworks to show that it's supporting the US, but it will, the China Republic, People's Republic of China, but it will not willingly risk a major nuclear strike on North Korea and on the Russian Far East. So it's become a very interesting little game with so much nuance in it, and Xi Jinping has to navigate that because he committed Beijing to the war against Taiwan, and now it looks as though the People's Liberation Army and others in the party, will not accept that.
And you entertain alternatives for Xi Jinping to maintain the fiction that he's going to conquer Taiwan. Mm. One of those fictions has a timeline to it. It involves TSMC. Explain, please, Gregory.
Well, it's the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC, which has 55% of the global market for contract chip manufacture. This is, advanced computer chips. And these are, as I say, truly advanced. They used to be 10 to 15 years ahead of the mainland Chinese chip capability. Now it's probably 3 to 4 years ahead. And that the TSMC has these very big facilities on Taiwan. The West has recognized the vulnerability they face if this company is somehow destroyed by a war from mainland China. So TSMC has been building new facilities in the United States, in Arizona, and they were due to start production of some of these advanced chips next year, 2024, and a year later or so to start an even more advanced chip manufacturing production. That's not going to happen. That's been delayed by a year or two for both of those plants. So that gives Beijing a small window of opportunity to destroy TSMC on Taiwan and thereby degrade the capability of Western industry to manufacture world-leading weapons and other products. That's basically one of the ace in the holes that Xi Jinping has. The question is, how do you take out the TSMC facilities without starting a major kinetic war with Taiwan, which would then automatically bring in Japan, for example, because Japan has said an attack on Taiwan would be equated to an attack on Japan. And Japan and the US and Japan and Australia already have a commitment to defending Taiwan. At the same time, we saw the Indians, we've discussed this before, that India, if mainland China attacked Taiwan, India would make moves against the PLA on the Tibetan Plateau and across northern Azad Kashmir, free Kashmir, into Central Asia to flank the People's Republic of China to the southwest. So really, it's very, very difficult for Beijing to attack TSMC without getting into that kind of escalation. And in any event, the minute they start a direct kinetic conflict with Taiwan, Taiwan could relatively easily have a strike of strategic weapons against the Three Gorges Dam. Now, if they destroy the Three Gorges Dam, the subsequent flooding would literally wipe out Beijing and Shanghai.
Now we come back to the question you asked provocatively at the beginning of this thought experiment. Given all these conditions, it's very, very probable that China will be somewhat less than a shining star, but Xi Jinping will still be in charge. He still has his security state, his state security and all of the surveillance mechanisms. So he's survived now. What does the landscape look for him post-TSMC destruction, post-defeat of the PLA along the borders? Does he maintain control?
Well, I think he would, in order for him to maintain control, he probably would make sure that he didn't get into those border wars with Vietnam, India, Russia as well, or, of course, Taiwan. So if he basically tried to ride the declining bronco of the Chinese economy down and stay in charge, what he would have is an economy with very little flexibility, massive unemployment, massive starvation. Even as we're seeing things today, there is no early recovery from the current economic decline of the PRC. So she would be presiding over an economy with very little external trade, except for the importation of what food they could afford. And they've got some financial reserves to do that. But basically, you'd be seeing massive hardship and therefore probably a disruptive population, but a very impoverished population with a strong military and a strong nuclear capability. So you'd have, if you like, a more modern version of Maoist China, which was unable to develop a prosperous state, but yet could still cause trouble on the world stage.
This is without kinetic war with Taiwan.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Without it.
That's
right.
Correct. So now that's possibly, you could argue, would be the best possible outcome for the world, because it would avoid a war between the People's Republic of China and the U.S. and the other surrounding countries. But it would probably be one of the worst outcomes for the Chinese people, because they would be left in stasis with virtually very little food, no prosperity, no mobility, and a declining social situation, and one which would see lives shortened very dramatically by drought and starvation and the like, as we saw with the Maoist situation in the Cultural Revolution, where we saw between 60 and 100 million people dying. And we are possibly going to see that sort of scale, not necessarily 60 to 100 million, maybe less, but massive levels of privation for the Chinese people. So while we might avoid a war, we're going to see several things. We're going to see a suffering Chinese population, and we are going to see the reduction of China's involvement with the global economy. That means less markets for foreign goods from Europe, Australia, and the United States, and less Chinese consumer goods and other things coming into global markets. And as a result, of course, that will be a major economic dislocation for all of us, requiring a reconstruction of the supply chain. And yes, we're already seeing that starting to happen with new suppliers emerging in South Asia and Southeast Asia. Some other areas will resume their industrial capability, whether that's in the U.S. or Australia or Western Europe.
She would remain in charge of this impoverished nation, as I understand it. And all that has a timeline, mm-hmm. because the construction of that TSMC alternative clone, you write, is 25, 26. Is that the timeline? He has to move before then, or else he loses his advantage. Is that, do I read that correctly?
Well, he has to move by then if he wants to degrade the, or if he's capable of degrading the global economic framework, and particularly the U.S. economy. He would have to strike at TSMC in Taiwan over the next year or so. And that's why we're seeing some of these short-term predictions for an attack on parts of Taiwan. Right. Whether the PLA will go along with that's debatable. So what we may see is
We have 30 seconds, Gregory. Go ahead.
Yeah, decline in the Chinese economy, but with a continued global interference capability and the ability to threaten with its nuclear weapons. At that point, either Xi will continue to be in the driver's seat, or they will just remove him because he's caused all of this problem, which is clearly the case.
Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, asking, what if Xi survives? We're going to turn now to our favorite segment of the week, the King Charles III Report. Doing very well, thank you very much. We have details. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.